They did it again, friend. Someone paid us to talk about a movie, and once again, it's a movie we enjoy.
I think someone thinks that it's a tax write-off if we do this, but joke's on them.
We're getting paid more for this recording than the entire Indians roster did in this movie.
Yes. So we're going to talk about Major League. We're going to sure talk about sports movies. We got a lot of, even though it's with the Cleveland Indians, we got a lot of Milwaukee connections that we can talk about here. And then just a very fun cast and crew overall. And Joe, who put up the money for this episode that we get to do for all our listeners?
This episode was brought to us by, I can't find it. To hell with it.
Listeners, welcome to another episode of the Midnight Boys Present, a paid podcast. I'm your good friend. Is that what I say? I haven't done the show in a while.
You doing a Mr. Rogers thing?
I came inside.
Oh, hi, neighbor.
I changed my shoes.
What?
Now you've got your casual sweater on.
Put on my casual sweater. Time
to feed the fish.
I'm your co-host, Rob. That's who I am. And I am joined by my my hardworking, believing in themselves friends, Joe and Duff.
Yeah, the rest of the rotation.
That's a lie, and you know it.
Yep, he's right.
We are talking about the movie Major League, and we have to start off right away with thanking another patron. Another one of our child army.
A wealthy benefactor.
Yeah, wealthy benefactor, which you can join at patreon.com/themidnightboys. We have longtime listener of the show since the Titanic Minute days.
Very involved OG
listener. Yes. Nathan, when I reached out to him, because, from my end, I just get the $50 and I, reach out to be like, what are we going to talk about? He opened it up to all sorts of things. He just wanted to thank us because he's been listening for over 5 years. So he had ideas in mind, and he wanted us to pick what we thought would be the most fun. And so his ideas were Inherent Vice, Major League, The Game, and a movie that none of us had heard of and had to look it up, The Electric Grandmother, which I think was a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah, it's a
robot and
grandma.
I think that I was pulling hard for it, but at the end it was only like an hour long after the commercials are cut out. So we wanted to give their money's worth.
Well, and then we had a great idea. We'll record on Major League and get it out before the World Series started. Well,
yep, we didn't do that.
We got it. We're gonna get it out before the 2024 World Series.
Yes,
started.
For sure. So we'll get it out before spring training.
We couldn't even finish it before the Japanese league finished their championship.
Oh wow. We're doing it now though. We're doing it now. We're talking about Major League, which I know for me, although I think mine's a little more complicated, watches me a lot growing up. What about you, Duff?
So this might have been the first time I saw the beginning of this movie. I've seen the last half and the conclusion. I've seen that like just through osmosis and growing up in the 80s and 90s. Like I feel like I've seen that a ton of times, but I don't think I'd seen the actual setup in the beginning. So some of this was new, but I remember the third act of this movie is very, very familiar to me.
See, I don't remember. I feel like I watched maybe Major League 2 more than Major League growing up, and I've just combined them all into a movie. Mm.
This is very much a cable movie. Or something you rented at a grocery store.
Yes, this is grocery store rental for me, big time. Big time. All right, so what happens in Major League? Okay, we got the Cleveland Indians. Never won a World Series. That it's still true, isn't it?
Still current.
They've won one. They've won two, but it was a really long time ago.
Well, no, but I mean, oh, yeah, that's true. But they haven't won one since, like, the 1950.
Oh, yeah, 48.
Okay, I'll look it up. Now they're the Guardians.
A few pennant runs and a few postseason appearances, but yeah, still no World Series appearance.
Yeah, 1948, 1920.
48. Yep, you're right. My bad.
So they are, you know, losing baseball team. They get the owner is Rachel Phelps, who inherits them from her dead husband. Guys, she's not in it for the love of the game.
No.
Her whole point is, can she get rid of...
Can you imagine an owner that doesn't care about winning? That couldn't yeah. be me.
Yeah, so she doesn't care about winning. She really just wants to lose a bunch of games so that she can move... The attendance dips below a certain number, and they lose enough games, and she can move them to Miami.
She doesn't care for Cleveland.
Yeah, for a team that gets baseball so right, how could they botch this part of the story? That could never happen.
Never. So she, you know, hires, like, a manager from a AAA team and just gets a bunch of, like, losers on the team. And, you know, like all good sports stories go, they start to lose, but they eventually come together and all the different skills come together.
These losers are lovable.
Losers are lovable. They go on a nice run, and they make the playoffs in the final game by beating the Yankees 3-2. And all the while, we also have, you know, as these movies are wont to do, we have to have a little bit of a romantic subplot happening here between aging veteran catcher Jake Taylor, played by Tom Berenger, along with his ex-girlfriend who he's trying to rekindle a relationship with, played by Rene Russo. This is one of Rene Russo's, like, first. There's a lot of people in this movie.
I think
who
it
got
was her first movie.
Yeah, she looks very young on this.
So, I mean, this movie is full of, like... First off, this movie is very fun. But the casting in this movie is so well done. And, like, Wesley Snipes is in this movie. And, like, this is one of his first movies, too.
Yeah.
And it's just also, like, let's not... The guy who I actually didn't remember being in this until... watching it is I didn't realize that Pedro Sereno is played by Dennis Haysbert.
Yeah, I don't think I put that together as well, like, until watching this again.
Is the Good Hands guy from Allstate?
Yes. Or he's on 24. He was on 24, wasn't he?
He's the president.
And he was in a movie, Far From Heaven, that we talked about a little while ago.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's in a lot of stuff. That's what I think. That's what I think of him in.
And this is one of his first roles as well. So you have a lot of, like, people getting their start in Major League.
Yep. He had a little platoon reunion with Charlie Sheen.
Charlie Sheen and Tom Berenger, yep. Right? Is also in platoon.
Yep.
And that's it. We have all these stars. We have all these, like, young, you know, young stars. Like, Charlie Sheen was, like, a huge star at this point. But anyone who watches the movie, who steals every scene they're in? It's Bob Uecker.
Yeah, Uecker.
Yep. Who is just perfect.
Yeah, it's a perfect baseball movie. I'm not going to say it gets every detail right, but, like, it gets the vibe correct. Like, it nails it. Nails it. I love every second of it.
Especially of its era. Of
hold
that
on.
Era.
Hold on. Let me the Berenger Russo scenes, like, we don't need that, but that's just part of the deal,
right?
Especially
right.
with movies, you know, you got to sit through that stuff.
It's not bad,
and I will say, okay, I just criticized it, but I will say it does offer the amusement and the surrealism of him driving the bullpen car to her house to hook
that
up.
That is a good gag.
And it's played completely straight. Like, the security guard, like, says he needs the car quick, and I know we're getting ahead of ourselves story-wise a little bit here, but
it doesn't matter.
But from the point he gets into the bullpen car, like, the romantic, like, their music starts playing immediately. It's awesome.
Yeah. And the other female that we sort of follow in this movie is a little bit, is the wife of the third baseman, who, after finding out that her husband, Roger Dorn, is cheating on her, immediately dresses up and seduces Charlie Sheen's Ricky Vaughn.
Yeah.
Without him knowing that she's the wife of the third baseman. Something else, guys.
Yeah, that's a turn.
But that's how you know, like, it's the wife of the one, like, actual sort of star on the team, Roger Dorn.
Yeah.
And that's how you know, like, he's like a real ball player, because despite this happening, he comes up in a big moment in the game that night and delivers a nice clean single. And that's what being a superstar is all about. You can block out that outside noise and you can perform. That's
right.
Why he's built different.
That's right. Your wife can bang the star pitcher.
Yep.
But you can still come through when it matters.
I mean, life's going to get complicated sometimes. The highest level players are able to perform no matter what.
Beautiful.
And that's really the most redeeming part of the film is he learns that lesson to be a team player and delivers those encouraging words to Wild Thing before his big moment. You know, okay, fine. Ricky slept with his wife.
He didn't know, to be clear.
Okay, yeah. But they've got a pennant to try to win.
Yep.
Yeah.
A true pro. Yeah, that's the most, like, maybe the most emotional part of this film is his redemption arc.
And he's very good at compartmentalizing because
yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking
right,
about.
Right after they win, he decks Charlie Sheen, and then they have it out. They have a hug, and that's that.
Yep.
He hasn't lost his wife yet, and he can always do marriage therapy. But if you lose that game, that season's over.
No, that yeah, you can get married whenever you want.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're right, Joe.
I can go get married tomorrow. I'm not going to win a World Series tomorrow. That can't happen.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And they didn't win the World Series. They just made the playoffs.
Yeah, they may have, you know.
They may have. That's true. That's true.
Hey,
I will say
the Miracle on Ice wasn't for the gold. Who cares?
I will say when you talk about like this gets everything right. The one thing in this movie, baseball wise, that I just can't get over is whenever the veteran pitcher Eddie Harris.
When he tries to throw?
Whenever he throws, I'm like, come on.
It's part of the charm, though. Like,
that guy, he looks like if you were going to cast a grave robber, that is the guy.
He's a guy that Ebenezer Scrooge forecloses on.
Yes.
He's just tall and lanky and looks like he has bronchitis or something. Like, he's pale. It's like, man, this guy is rough.
He has the consumption.
Yeah.
He's 45. I think he's 45 when they shot that movie. He looks 10 years older than that. And it's perfect. It works, though. Because there's guys like that.
Oh, yeah. He'll say he's a Marlboro 45. I'll say that.
He reminds me of former Brewers. He didn't have a long stint with the Brewers, but he bounced around. And actually, I think it was with Cleveland a little bit. Let me look that up quick. But Doug Jones, change-up thrower extraordinaire.
Okay.
And sadly, the first Google result for Doug Jones is the actor and contortionist from
the Fawn
Guillermo
from
del Toro movie. So I'm gonna
Hey, I will not tolerate Doug Jones slander.
It's not slander. Guy. Oh, he's great. Okay. Yes, he was with Cleveland. I think that was like the prime of his career. But I have fond memories of him, and he would just come in as the closer and throw changeup after changeup after changeup. And it was a great time. And so, like, that's what's so great about baseball is there's a place for dudes like that. They look like they're about to be eligible for Social Security.
Yep.
You can hear their shoulder popping every time they throw a pitch, and you know they're also hungover.
Yes.
Yeah. So
that's why this is the great sport.
Yeah, and I was going to say, number one, I'm glad we picked, like, the one sport that I actually followed, like, like late 80s, early 90s baseball. And so this, you know, this kind of spurred a lot of memories for me watching this again, because it had been quite a long time. But kind of to jump on that, this was the end of the last era where you could just be like an out of shape loser in baseball. And like that was like more often the norm. Like, obviously, there's still some players like that, but, you know, it's kind of like 80s wrestling. Like, half the dudes would just, like, you know, have a gut. And it's that kind of, that John Kruk, I ain't an athlete, lady, I'm a ball player. Like, that type of thing.
We need to go back.
Yeah, the ball player thing, it's like the perfect quote on that. They are, you know, and this is, I mean, even like the Yankees first baseman, he's played by
Pete Vukovich,
who like looks like if David Wells didn't go for a jog that day.
Half these guys look like David Wells.
He had been retired for a while at that point, to be fair. But yeah, I believe he played for like 11 years. But he was a pitcher too. Like that also makes it different.
Yeah, great mustache.
Oh yeah. And extremely intimidating. So like this, a lot of people talk about how like big money has ruined sports. You know, it's not the same, which like is largely nonsense. But that's one way where it did kind of ruin baseball, is now these guys didn't have to get a different job in the offseason and they could exercise more.
Mm.
It's a shame.
Who is your like? I was wondering about this, and I think it's true. Maybe you guys can help me. So, you know, Ricky Vaughn, played by Charlie Sheen, the Wild Thing, and there's that great moment where Wild Thing starts playing, and the whole stadium is singing to it.
Electric.
Yes.
Yeah. Electric. I've seen this movie probably 100 times, and I watched it again, and I had goosebumps. It doesn't get any better than that.
Is this, like, before this movie, closers weren't coming out to songs, were they?
I don't think so. And
like, that's an amazing thing this movie gave us.
Now, Charlie Sheen, generally a pretty reliable guy and someone we could trust. And he insists that that Mitch Williams stole his bit. And I think Mitch Williams did come out to Wild Thing after this. But yeah, from what I've read, because I probably was first going to games only a year or two before this film came out, when I was like 6 or 7. So I don't really remember. But from what I've read, no, that wasn't really a thing before this movie. And also just being a closer mattered at that time, but it wasn't as important as they are now.
Mm-hmm.
Although now you could say their importance has been pretty overrated for a while, but whatever, we don't need to get into that.
But I definitely remember Mitch Williams when he's on the Phillies during those World Series years, like being Wild Thing and coming out to that song.
Oh yeah, and Trevor Hoffman coming out to Hell's Bells.
Right. Right. Yeah. Like, and now every closer like has a song, and it's just wild. Like this movie,
the era, like walk up music in general, like when, you know, who was the first to do that?
Oh, shit. Have walk-up music?
I would have.
Yeah.
Dang it. I wish I knew that.
I don't know. It's a great question.
I feel like that's a very mid to late 80s thing. So I don't know. I'd be curious.
Did it happen before or after? So apparently, I'm just a quick Google here. It says that it started in
the White Sox.
Okay.
According to MLB.com, because
of the organ,
Sox organist played in the 70s. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it goes back a while, but yeah.
So the original organist started dying, and they're just like, "Can we just do something pre-recorded?"
So I guess the question would be, guys, what would be your? I don't know. You want like? Let's stick to the theme. Like, if you're a closer and you're coming out there to, you know, get those last three outs, what's playing for you?
I've thought about this a lot. Mm-hmm. And I change my answer all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're now they don't get as much time to warm up. So you have to have a great song, but you have to also know it's only going to be playing for like maybe a minute tops.
Yeah.
Maybe 90 seconds.
If that,
like if you Yeah, so a starting pitcher, you're going to get to hear your song longer, but it's not as intense of a moment.
Nope.
It doesn't have quite that drama of from warming up. I tend to go with the Ramones.
Mm.
53rd and 3rd, I think, would be my song. Because it's going to be, like, if, a lot of closers pick songs that are really, really famous. So then people first know of the song just as the song. I am guessing not very many people under the age of, like, 35 sure. know 53rd and 3rd. It's not exactly a top Ramones hit. So then, and again, if you're gonna come out to a song, that must mean you have some degree of an ego. So absolutely. If I'm gonna yeah. display that ego, then I want to be the person they think of when they hear that song. I don't want the song to be more famous than me.
Okay.
Even though obviously okay. the Ramones are a huge band. Do you guys know what I mean? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm explaining it well.
No, I get it.
I think it makes sense.
And it kind of has a tough, like, let's fight attitude to it, which I, yeah, that's the kind of thing I'm looking for. Victory Dance by My Marty Jacket would be cool, too, but okay. it takes too long to get going.
Well, you could, I mean, yeah, but you can decide what part of the song starts, right?
Well, like, but it's the beginning of the song that's the cool part. So, but I think that would work. But what makes Wild Thing work so well is, like, the crowd can sing along to it, and that is electric. What would you guys pick?
So what I've always said to the answer if I was a closer is I would use the song Pussy Control by Prince.
Yeah, you're not gonna be able to do that.
Yeah, you're gonna have to do the radio edit and that's gonna sound lame.
What do you think they would call it?
P-Control.
Yeah, P-Control.
That's the actual name of the radio edit.
Well, with your diuretics, you would also need to have pee control.
Yeah.
In case it's a long outing.
Now, I did get to choose an at-bat song, a walk-up song, on a kickball team.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I saw this in person. Heard this in person.
And I don't think I told you, Duff, what the song was before I came up, did I?
No, you didn't. Although we'd been drinking for a couple hours, so maybe it did, but I don't know. It was still funny.
And I agonized over it, Joe.
Yeah.
I wanted to pick something that would have the right effect on the people that, you know, you're going against, right? But also to lift me up, too, right? So that I'm ready for the big moment. So I chose Firework by Katy Perry.
Oh, my God. That song sucks, man. Really bad.
It's awesome. And it
sparklers came out of his tits and everything.
I hate that song.
Oh, it's great.
I really I have a viscerally like pained reaction to that song.
You never feel like a plastic bag?
Is that a line?
It references yes. American Beauty like 15 years after that movie.
All right. So what about you, Duff?
So I have always said for walk-up music, but I feel like it could translate to the closer, is, as you know, I like Kitsch. And have you ever heard the Third Man theme, but
yes.
by Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass?
That's awesome.
No, I've not heard that version.
I mean, do yourself a favor and go listen to it because it was jaunty and upbeat and you can get a good clap going.
And that's not on Whipped Cream, though.
No,
is it Whipped
this
Cream
is on going
other delights?
Going Places, the one with the plane with a scantily clad lady. You're thinking of the other scantily clad Tijuana.
With the cream all over her. Yeah. God bless Herb Alpert.
Still alive and still kicking out content.
He's really? Yep. He's 88 years old.
I think he just had some album. So he's still with us and still sharp, I guess.
Wow.
But yeah, it would get everyone be in a good mood. And you know, it would maybe make the opponent think less of me at first, like to get him out, get him out of the zone, but then
what a choice. Yep. God, that's great.
If am, so I tried to pick a song that no one else has used, so it eliminates my actual number one choice. Like, mm-hmm. if I just decide I don't care that someone else has used it, I think For Whom the Bell Tolls by Metallica is the coolest possible.
Yeah, that'd be pretty slick.
Yeah.
As is Hell's Bells, as you mentioned before.
Yeah.
What about Turn the Page?
By Seeger? Yeah, yes. That saxophone part? That'd be really funny to hear.
After you strike someone out, you do air sax?
Yeah.
It would be really funny to hear that saxophone riff going through like a stadium of 40,000 people
mm-hmm.
as you walk up to the mound.
So we talked about in this movie about this cheap owner and how there's no cheap owners. Mm-hmm. But I was shocked to see in my little bit of research, this is actually this what happened to this owner. The story is based off of a Minnesota Twins owner. Are you guys aware of this?
I mean, I was aware of this. Yeah.
Okay.
Good old Carl.
Calvin Griffin.
Or sorry, Calvin.
Yeah. He would end up selling the team to Carl Pohlad.
Yes, that's where I was thinking of Carl. Yep.
Right.
And Pohlad was really cheap too.
Yep.
So
yeah.
Yep.
So
it's so funny how the Twins pretend to be a small market. Like the Twin Cities media market is, isn't it like one of the 12 biggest media markets in the United States?
Except for Chicago, I would guess it's biggest in the Midwest because of the metro. There's like 3 million people in the metro. So
yeah, in their own division, after the White Sox, they have the biggest. There's no way Detroit's a bigger media market than the Twin Cities, right?
I would highly doubt it.
I wouldn't think so.
And they're
so,
obviously
no.
Kansas City isn't.
Yeah.
And Cleveland isn't. So it's just so funny that like so much revenue is just driven by how big your media market is. And they're literally called the Twin Cities because there's two of them.
Yep.
And the suburban sprawl is pretty significant.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, like I said, in the like. My county, Hennepin County alone, is like something like 1.5 million people. Like it's the metro is very sprawling.
So what happened is in the 70s, when they were planning the Metrodome, Calvin Griffith negotiated that the team's lease, if the Twins' home attendance was under 1.4 million per season for 3 consecutive years, that the team could be released from its contract and leave Minnesota.
Yep.
So he just started not signing any.
He like gave away a bunch of star talent. Like he just, yeah. Like he's like, well, I could pay more money, you know, or I could just, try to find this loophole clause again and get out that way.
Yeah. And he was going to move him to Florida.
Yep.
Cause they lost 102 games in their first year in the Metrodome. Then 92 years, the year afterward, the attendance was under 900,000 each of those seasons. But then that's when the banker Carl Pohlad bought them.
Yeah. So I have a few things about Calvin Griffith. Number one, to be fair, his family, and it was a family much like the Pohlads, but his role was just baseball. Like that was their only asset. And he was one of the last families and one of the last people to come from that, where now it's just, you know, it's like some rich dude's like, oh, I have to have a football team to really show how big my dick is. Otherwise, I'm not in the club. You know what I mean?
Yeah, mm-hmm. there's not a lot of, like, the Bears are still like this. I think the Steelers, right? There's still a few, like, family-owned teams. And like, they're all just, like, obviously evil in a very different way.
Yeah,
but the difference is like their only money is like the money that they're making off the team. So like on paper, they're worth like, you know, billions of dollars.
Right.
But that's because of the value of the team.
The
itself.
Lakers, I think, are family owned as well. Right.
Yeah. But yeah.
So in some way, I respect Calvin Griffith because he was cheap, but cheap for an actual somewhat legitimate reason. You know, it's not like when they sold to the Pohlads. The Pohlads are just these, you know. Rich F's who own
were they local, the Pohlads?
Yeah, they are local. He was one of the, I think he was on like the Forbes top money makers list, and he was like the richest person in Minnesota till he died, and now his son,
now it's the MyPillow guy.
Probably.
And the Prince Estate, those are like the top two.
So one thing that I know you guys will like about one of the reasons that the Twins came to Minnesota in the first place was that Ham's Beer agreed to do all of the coverage for them. And that, gotta get out my notes here. But so part of the reason was that Hams, which was, this was like the heyday of Hams beer in the 50s and 60s. They said, like, Hams beer, they guaranteed a multi-year contract and revenue. They established the Twins Broadcast Network, which brought Twins games to 7 different states. So Hams kind of got the market thing more than Calvin Griffith actually did. The Hams company, they were the ones who got Herb Carneal, who was the voice of the Twins for like 40 years. Like, he was for both World Series. And so Hams was a big reason. And again, like, this guy, he's a businessman. He's like, well, heck, if this company is willing to do all this promotion and handle all the market share and help boost the revenue, yeah. And so there was a lot of other stuff, but that was the reason they came to the 60s. They came to Minnesota in the 60s in the first place. Guys, if you haven't looked up what Calvin Griffith looks like, he looks like an FBI guy in the 1940s.
he absolutely helped Hoover hide bodies.
Yeah, yeah, he was in the Pinkertons. Yep.
what is it? What is, does he have a cigarette in a cigarette holder in this picture?
I don't know. The other really kind of interesting thing,
or it's like a pen, I think,
is that Calvin Griffith, he did some very famous racism in the 70s
against Rod Carew,
well, just against black people in general, but
okay,
but,
Rod Carew being
not,
part
not
of that.
A good look when your only star player is Rod Carew. He was speaking to I think it was like the Waseca Elks Lodge or something like that. And he decided that...
Oh, no.
So he said that one reason that he wanted to come to Minnesota was that there are so few black people around.
Oh my God.
And he says, tell you why we came to Minnesota. When I found out you only had 15,000 blacks here, which I think that number's low, even for them.
That doesn't sound right at
all. He said, black people don't go to ball games, but they'll fix up a wrestling ring and put up such a chant it'll scare you to death. Unbelievable.
Oh my God.
We came here because you've got good, hardworking white people here. And somehow they forgot about that and gave him a statue at Target Field. And then like 2 or 3 years ago, those comments surfaced again. They took it down.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Calvin Griffith, sports owners, huh? What do you know, guys? Good people.
What? Yeah. Nothing but the best. So the other thing I didn't realize about this movie is the writer and director, David S. Ward, wrote The Sting.
Yeah. Bangers.
And after this, wrote a movie that I have great memories of and directed, and I have not revisited, but King Ralph.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Sleepless in Seattle, which he co-wrote.
King Ralph.
Co-wrote with Nora Ephron, but yes, King Ralph. King Ralph is a movie I think we should talk about.
I think we need to revisit King Ralph for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I have not seen King Ralph since whenever it came out.
It's been a while. I believe Peter O'Toole is in that movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Before we... I just want to make sure that I get to bring this up. One thing that I really like in this movie, and I really like in like late 70s and 80s movies, comedies mainly, and I want to see come back... Slobs versus snobs.
Absolutely.
There is never, you know, even some of the worst of those examples, like, you know, Revenge of the Nerds, which gets very rapey at the end. The concept, who doesn't like that? Who doesn't like seeing some rich jerks get theirs?
Yeah, and, Bad News Bears. Yep. It's good. It works well for baseball.
It works very well for baseball.
And sports, your movies in general, actually.
Slapshot is a great, another movie about just effing losers but common people, salt of the earth people.
And it, like, sports are a great way to like put that in there too, right? I mean, that this this movie has
bring back class warfare in comedies and sports movies. Slobs versus snobs. Always love that trope.
I mean, in this movie, they to inspire everyone, the coach who's the coach played by? He's fantastic.
Oh, he's so good. Oh man.
James Gammon.
He looks looks and sounds like a walrus.
Yes.
His voice is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He's incredible. But they put up a like a bathing suit like standee of the
it's a supermodel with the owner's head on it.
Yes, yeah. And then every time they get a win, they get to pull off a piece of Steve Harper. Unbelievable.
You might
what a
say
world.
Some things in the movie don't age particularly
yeah,
well.
Do you know what doesn't age? You know what, actually, that said, the thing that ages the least well in this movie isn't the movie's fault, but it's the fact that it's the Cleveland Indians, and every phrase or it's scalping, it's like all the Native American imagery is like, and all the newspapers and the radio and the TV, and you're just like, man, it's not the movie's fault because this was the baseball team in 1989.
They kept the Chief Wahoo logo for like what, another 10-15 years, didn't they?
Longer than that, I
think. So here's the thing. They remained the Indians for
22
more years.
Yeah.
Yep.
They phased out Wahoo, but they were still the Indians.
No, 32 more years.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. 32 more years.
32 more years. So I was watching the film, and it is a film with a capital F.
You're watching pure cinema.
The picture.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're right that these things just age so poorly. And like that, justifiably, the movie should be criticized for that. Maybe less. I will give it a pass for basing it on the Indians because story wise it makes sense.
Yes,
they're long suffering, and it's also very personal for the writer and director. He grew up an Indians fan.
Yep,
and like sort of, I think has been quoted many times as saying like, the only way the Indians could win he could see them win a World Series is if he wrote a movie where they did.
Right,
and. But then just the fact that this organization specifically and then Major League Baseball in general just allowed this nickname to persist until the year 2022 when they finally were renamed the Guardians is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
2018 is when they stopped using Chief Wahoo.
Man.
Like, it's crazy.
What do you think the straw – was there a straw that broke the camel's back? Like, did they wake up – it's like – listen, I thought about it some more, and this Chief Wahoo, he's not nice.
I don't know, but apparently it was last worn when they lost to the Astros in October 8th, 2018 in the ALDS, and then apparently that was also Indigenous Peoples Day.
Mm.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe they were waiting for Bob Feller to die, but he died in 2010, so
it
wasn't that. What's also funny is when you start the film within the opening sort of establishing shots of Cleveland, one of the first things they show is the Guardian statue, statues on that bridge, and it's like, well, that's what the team is now.
Yeah, that's true. I love the beginning with the song. God, why
can't
Randy Newman song?
Randy Newman song. Yeah.
I think that beginning. I don't know.
Gonna have a movie about losers, like having Randy Newton. I combined Wade Newton and Randy Newman there. I think. Let's get. It's too late for that collab now. I guess right. Maybe they did collab. I don't even know. But it sets the tone perfectly, and you could tell that a person who lived in the Midwest. I'm sure he didn't shoot that B-roll footage, but like you could tell it's a Midwestern person that made this movie.
This is a love letter to the Rust Belt.
It doesn't like that beginning, you know, at least for me and I'm sure for all of us, like because of that love, like Rust Belt cities and stuff, like it doesn't come off as condescending in any way. It's like a very loving.
No, it's just real.
Yeah.
A very loving, like real version of what, you know, those cities are all about,
and it helps people from other parts of the world understand why the team is so important to people who live there because we have to live here.
Yeah,
like the Brewers matter so much because we live here from November through May.
Yep, and when the summer starts and you go out to Miller Park or whatever it is now. And you like, you know, tailgate with your friends. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
No, it's go Brewers.
Yeah. Like the sports means something in a way that I don't think it can ever mean as much to places where it's nice out all the time and their economy is okay.
I don't think you're wrong, actually, no. Joy. I think you're like, I'm trying to think of like the most passionate sports like fans, and it's always cold cities.
Yep. They endure
entirely.
The other thing this movie nails is the shots of people sort of reacting to the team's improving fortunes, where they're like, they're protecting themselves with cynicism so they won't, but you could tell deep down they're so excited and they believe.
Yeah.
Also nails what a Milwaukee bar looks like. Even though I know it's not like set in Milwaukee, but it was shot in Milwaukee. And you could still go to that bar. It's the fourth base, it's called. I think it's in West Dallas. I don't think it's in Milwaukee. Yeah, it's in West Dallas.
I think I've been to that bar.
But just you see, is the bar shaped like a horseshoe? You're in the Midwest.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm. There very well is probably bars in the South like that, but I doubt it.
Yeah, it is. I was going to mention that. So not only do we have Bob Uecker, but we also have this movie was shot at Milwaukee County Stadium, right? Like the majority of it was shot in Milwaukee and around Milwaukee.
Yeah, pretty much almost everything was.
And so my
Sorry, go ahead.
My question to you is, do you know anyone who was one of the extras during the big game?
I know a lot of I work with people who ran the scoreboard for the movie shoots. So
okay.
There's still a lot of people left that work at American Family Field who were part of the crew that ran the graphics. Now, they always claim, and in reading, doing some research, they always claim the reason why this was shot at County Stadium was because of the scoreboard, because it was state of the art for that time. So then they could cut to those shots of the scoreboard graphics and animations and stuff, and that you couldn't really do that at a lot of other stadiums. But I couldn't find any mention of that in the interviews I read. Like they said it was because it was cheaper to shoot here, and the stadium looked similar, which it does.
I choose
to believe it's the scoreboard.
And like the bar they go to, you mentioned, and even I think the restaurant that we see Rene Russo at with when Tom Berenger first like
the
you
fancy
know,
restaurant,
that's also in Milwaukee or was. I don't know if it still exists anymore, but that was also filmed in Milwaukee. That's fun.
Yeah, I'm sure I know people who are in the stands as extras, but I can't remember off the top of my head who they are.
Yeah,
it's still something like. I mean, it was a big deal. I mean, like I said, it increases the meaningfulness of sports when you live in a place like this. It also, when they shoot a movie in your town, it's a big deal. One of two baseball movies to use a Brewer Stadium. We are also, of course, the home of Mr. 3000.
Yes.
Maybe the only baseball team, a baseball movie I've never seen. I've still never seen it. It doesn't look very good. But I did go to the rap party
It is funny and kind of wild that a major city like Milwaukee doesn't have that many movies that I can think of.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's some shots in the Blues Brothers from it.
But that's a Chicago-centric movie, too. Like, it's just, that's pure Chicago.
Yeah, so it's just like... Well, I mean, I guess if you think about it, like if
Bridesmaids is the only one I can really think about.
If you're going to shoot scenes, Bridesmaids, all they did is they shot B-roll footage in a couple places. Like none of the movie was really shot.
But it takes place in Milwaukee. Yeah. Is what I'm saying.
See, there's some movie. So it's if you're going to shoot outside,
I suppose you are limited to 3 hours of sunlight a day most of the time.
Yeah. So like if your movie is largely set indoors, then what's the point of coming here?
That is true. Never thought of it that way.
The other one that I'm going to mention that I think we all kind of love way more than we should, maybe, is the Dawn of the Dead remake takes place in Milwaukee.
Oh, that's right. But do they show anything was there any actual footage shot in Milwaukee?
I don't know if it actually. I don't think so. I'm sure it was shot in Canada.
Or Atlanta or something.
My film Twitter sin take is. Zack Snyder's version is better than the Romero version.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. It's awesome.
Yeah, I like it. I haven't.
He's never done anything else good, but.
Listen, I kind of liked the Snyder Cut.
That's right. You were red pilled. I forgot.
I thought it was good.
That's when we thought we lost Rob.
Now, I watched that over multiple nights, which I think was the way to do it, but I did enjoy it. I just looked at it was 242 minutes long.
Jesus Christ, come on.
What is wrong with me?
During the pandemic.
Yeah.
Before I forget, I don't keep in touch, but I knew people who were in Little Big League filmed at the Metrodome.
Oh, man. I remember Little
Big
League.
Where the kid inherits, I believe it's his grandfather is Jason Robards, maybe? And then he inherits the team. And it's like an Air Bud situation. It's like, well, there's nothing that says he can't be the manager.
Right.
Yeah.
That one has a lot of, like, players in it.
It has. I believe so. It also has Gary Busey, I think, is, like, the washed-up pitcher who kind of, like...
Well, that's perfect, yeah. If that's true. Yeah. There's, you know, it feels like around this era, maybe it was because of the success of Major League, there was a lot of baseball movies.
Well... There was, so I'm going to link two things together, and I think that it's just a shows like this was the peak of kind of like baby boomer permeation in Hollywood, is that in the early 90s, you did have a lot of baseball movies, and you also had a bunch of movies based on sitcoms from the 60s, and it was just like baby boomers, like, let's make a movie of Adam's Family, let's, you know, more baseball, more old sitcoms.
Sandlot, Rookie of the Year, yeah.
What's the one where his arm's in the cast and it heals weird? Is that Rookie of the Year?
That's Rookie of the Year, yeah. But, you know, here's what's interesting to me. And I guess, to be fair, in the 80s, you also had, like, Field of Dreams and Bull Durham and stuff, which, and even this movie is rated R.
We need to go back.
It makes sense that it's rated R because they swear a lot. I mean, a lot.
Take a look at this effing guy.
Yeah. It is, again, it's just the MPAA is so effed up, I'll say.
Yeah.
Like, when you look at some things that are R and, like, this, I mean.
This is PG-13 would be fine for this, to be clear.
It's just the whole dumb thing, like, oh, you get one F-bomb.
Right.
It's like, okay. Whatever.
Yeah.
Because there's no violence. There's
no
adult thematics. There's no sex.
It has a legitimately good positive message.
Yeah. This is the type of thing like.
We see a lot of butts. Man butts.
It's not sexualized though. No, like how not. Like how old were you when you saw this movie, guys? Like I was probably
12, 10. Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah, I think that's 10, fine. Yeah, I don't think that, like, it's like, oh, he's not old enough for Major League.
How many times do you think the F word is used in this movie?
A dozen?
I would guess at least 25.
22. Wow. 22 times. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's such a funny scene when the manager, he's just standing there naked when the owner comes in. She's like, don't you want to put some clothes on? No. And he just yells at her because the whirlpool tub doesn't work. Yeah. She's so cheap. So funny.
The thing that aged this movie besides the Cleveland Indians name is the American Express bit.
Oh, yeah, well. I mean, an annoying commercial featuring athletes, that's still very much of this time.
I thought you were going to say the whole worshipping Judo thing, which is... that kind of sticks.
Jobu.
That sticks out. And
that's true.
It doesn't ruin it for me or anything, but this is, it does. I see it pop up a lot on most racist movies lists.
Yeah, that doesn't age great. But it doesn't. I mean, I can't really defend it. Like as Joe said, there are plenty of things that don't age that well. That's one of them. This movie's, what, almost 40 years old
now?
Yeah,
35 coming on 40.
Years old, which makes me feel really old. But it's fine. There are definitely things. I love...
It's treatment of women is a little... I won't say of its time, because even for its time was a little retrograde. But
right.
But again, these guys are meathead losers, so I give it... I view it through that lens.
I suppose you're right. If you look at it, like, would ball players in 1989 act this way?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Oh, they'd be way worse.
Yeah,
probably. Yeah, for sure. Anything else you guys want to add or talk about with this movie?
I'll just sort of lament the fact that it's a virtual certainty we will never ever see, like, certainly not a rated R baseball movie ever again. I don't think there's any way.
Not released to theaters, because it would, you're right about
and you're
that.
Not probably really going to see very many baseball movies, period, anymore, because
the audience is graying overall.
Yeah, it's an older group of people that still watch baseball, and it isn't an international sport in the same way that basketball is.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just not, if you're going to tell a sports story, if you're going to use baseball, you're really, from like the cold-blooded, terrible studio executive perspective, you're just inherently working with a pretty small pool of potential audience, which is a shame, because like, you don't even need to like baseball to like this movie.
No, absolutely not.
So that's what's so dumb about it. And this movie was like a good solid hit, especially considering its budget.
Yeah.
And like, people, it's still a very much loved film as well.
I think it has definitely stood the test of time, and that's still in the zeitgeist. Like, I see, I'll hear people talk about this or see stuff about it. Like, Wild Thing with Charlie Sheen is still very much a beloved, as you said, it's a beloved scene. It's a crowd pleaser.
Yeah, and the movie, like, it works so well because it's funny. Like, it's a funny movie. But it also works really well as a sports movie. Like, it works in both ways, and neither one takes away from the other.
It's very sincere. And, we talked about how the Tom Berenger, Rene Russo plot is inconsequential. But overall, it's nice because these guys care about something. Like, they care about, it's not just about winning. It's about, again, it's like, oh, we'll show that old lady. Like, we'll show her.
Slobs versus snobs.
It's about uniting for a cause. It's again, like, so dumb that kids like couldn't go see this, because it's actually very wholesome.
And it also is for movies. I don't think there's any doubt that baseball is the best sport to make a movie about, because the rhythm of the game and the rhythm of a season lends itself to storytelling in a way I don't think any other sport does.
It's the most dramatic sport.
Yeah,
I think. Yeah.
I mean, just the climactic play when Tom Berenger bunts for a base hit, which, like, you could get into, like, that odd decision, because you know what else would score that runner from second? A single. But anyways, it's cooler. It's
a good
cooler
fake
for the
out.
Movie.
It's
to,
a good
to,
fake.
Yeah, could you imagine someone calling their shot and then bunting in
that,
a reel?
That's, I think this is pretty much like almost a perfect movie, but the calling the shot thing is
twice.
Maybe too much even for me. But whatever, who cares? It's just one little thing. But it just the incredible, unbelievable, almost nauseating tension from pitch to pitch in a playoff game or a big game like that. There isn't anything like that.
No.
And also, and that's in like the sort of that scene, the down to the scene level. But then, in course of a whole narrative, I mean, they play 162 games.
Yeah.
Plus spring training. Just the slog of a season lends itself to, I think, sort of an attitude and a perspective among the characters that makes, like, just the atmosphere of the clubhouse is different. Like, we talked about any given Sunday, a few months ago now, right? And like, that's overall like a pretty good movie, and I think in some ways a fairly realistic look at maybe not a football game, but the way players put themselves on the line and how dirty it is behind the scenes,
the dynamics of the sport, and all the corporate machinations that get in there.
But it just doesn't lend itself to like classic Hollywood storytelling. Like this movie, like, story structure wise, could have been made in like 1937. Like, it's just good old classic Hollywood storytelling.
Yeah, that is a good point. It has the classic, like, we have our setting, and then we have Rise to Action, and then there's more conflict, and then we have the playoff game.
And not a lot of the movie's action is really about the games. It's more about the dynamics among the players and coaches and fans and I guess you could say media with Bob Uecker's inclusion. It just baseball is just different. It's just nothing else is like it. I mean, it's the only sport the most iconic personality in Milwaukee Brewers history is our radio announcer. And that's not an insult, I don't think, because players like come and go, but it's the only sport where it's a sport where a guy can, he's been calling games for like over 40 years.
And he looks like he did in this movie. Like did he just come out of the womb like that?
Yeah. He still looks great. I mean, I see him, you know, fairly often kind of up close and like, yeah, he's pretty old now. He's got to be almost 90,
he's
right?
52 years he's been calling the Brewers 52. Since 1971.
He's going to turn 90 in January. And he is still so funny. Does he call a game as, like, does he make more mistakes now than he did 20 years ago? Sure. But he can still captivate an audience on the radio. Like, I listen to him all the time, and he's so funny and like calling a basketball game or a football game, like you don't have time to tell stories.
Yeah.
But that's why baseball just works so well. It's because it has room to breathe in it and room to talk and room to tell stories. And it's a game that's just built around like failure with occasional moments of success. Like, I mean, this is a cliche, but like even like the great hitters, like making out, you know, 60% of the time.
Yeah.
And it, so like, I think to excel in a sport like this, again, like A, you've got to be able to compartmentalize the fact that your wife boned the pitcher that day. and then also just be able to compartmentalize all of those moments of failure and just focus on the next opportunity in front of you. And that's not something a lot of people can do. And I just think it lends itself to, just storytelling that I myself am just very captivated by. And to bring us back to a point that Duff made earlier, baseball players also look funny in their tight uniforms, especially back then, because like they just look, it's just everything about it is so ridiculous. Why is the manager wearing the uniform?
Yeah. The only sport they do that in.
It always makes me think of like when you see, like now players are all like largely, a lot of them, especially position players, just like pretty ripped, really fit guys.
Yeah.
But like long, you know, back in the County Stadium days, you know, because of, like my friend's dad, like I would get to walk in the tunnel sometimes, and I didn't witness this, but our good friend Brian did. He's back there. So Brian's a year younger than me. So this is probably, I don't know, he's probably 10 years old, maybe a little older than that. And he's walking in the tunnel of County Stadium, and he walks behind the visiting clubhouse. And guys, guess who's in that visiting clubhouse? The New York Yankees, right? Like just the magic of that. And he rounds the turn, and he sees this figure in a baseball uniform. Who could it be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And who was it? It was Hideki Arabu sitting on a folding chair that was too small for him, smoking a cigarette. God bless baseball players.
Amen. Amen. Well, you know, I got to bring it back to Nathan. Thanks so much for paying us to talk about this movie.
Yeah, thank you very much. Hopefully,
God,
hopefully
I was laughing
we deliver.
So hard while I was watching this again. Oh, my
yeah.
God.
I really enjoyed rewatching it. And it had been long enough since I've seen it that there was things where I was like, oh, it was still magical to me. And yeah, it was very fun. Very fun. And listeners, if you're like, you got $50 burning a hole in your pocket, you go to patreon.com.
Ouch, what am I going to do with this money? It's on fire in my pocket.
Or you can just pay $2 and just listen to, I don't know, there's like 4 years worth of episodes you can listen to. So you can do that as well. But you know what? Major League, fun movie, great cast, well-directed, well-written, looks great.
It's very funny that, did you notice that every time Wesley Snipes runs in this movie, it's in slow motion?
Yes.
It's because he's really slow in real life.
And apparently you never see him throw it because he can't throw a baseball. Yeah.
It's so funny that he's in two of the most iconic sports movies and he's just god-awful at both of them. Basketball and White Men Can't Jump, and then this movie. Yeah. But I don't know. I guess I can't speak for you guys, but I'm a Wesley Snipes fan.
I like him. It's fine. He's hilarious in this, and I usually enjoy it when I see him.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. All right. Well, we'll be back, listeners, in the future with a new season and stuff coming out. You know, holidays are coming up. Who knows when things will happen? But
you'll hear
happen.
Us again. We promise.
You'll hear us again. We're not. No one's going anywhere.
Well, you could lock in one episode a month, no matter what.
That's right.
For a
That's
low,
right.
low price of how much, Rob?
$2, Joe. Just $2. It's incredible. What a deal.